You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Wednesday the 24th of August 2022 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at RadioAlbion.com. Well, the first bit of news that I want to get into today was posted by Professor Edward Dutton, a man who I very much look up to. We have an interview with him that you will find on RadioAlbion.com and we also feature him rather a lot on our stream. Now he's pointing out an article in Nature which appears to go completely against the spirit of science, of being unbiased and just trying to get to the absolute truth of a matter, and it's all about new ethics guidance. I'm not going to read the whole article because it's quite technical. I'll just read the beginning section of it so that you get an idea of what's being discussed here. New ethics guidance addresses potential harms for human population groups who do not participate in research, but may be harmed by its publication. So it's not talking about the people that are taking part in the surveys or who are being viewed, but the people from the group that those individuals actually come from, what the information that is collected, how that might affect the group. Although academic freedom is fundamental, it is not unbounded. The same ethical considerations should underlie science about humans as apply to research with human participants. Well-established ethics frameworks govern the conduct of studies with human participants. Research ethics bodies use these frameworks to examine prospectively whether research projects involving human participants align with ethical principles. So is it going to harm the individual in any way, physically or mentally harm the individual to do this study is what they're referring to there. However, these frameworks apply to research involving the participation of humans and do not generally consider the potential benefits and harms of research about humans who do not participate directly in the research. Such research is typically exempt from ethics review. Yet people can be harmed indirectly. For example, research may inadvertently stigmatize individuals or human groups. It may be discriminatory, racist, sexist, ableist, or homophobic. It may provide justification for undermining the human rights of specific groups simply because of their social characteristics. Along with other Springer Nature colleagues, we led the development of new guidance that addresses these potential harms and is incorporated in our research ethics guidance. This guidance extends consideration of the principles of beneficence and non-maleficence, key elements of all ethics frameworks for research with human participants, to any academic publication. So what they're saying is, if you do, for instance, an IQ study and you discover that the IQ of a particular people group is below average, then that could be seen as discriminatory, it could be seen as racist or sexist, depending on what the people group is, so that research should just not be carried out. Professor Dutton has this to say about it: science must respect the dignity and rights of all humans. That's a quote from the article. Science must have no interest in such philosophical issues. Science must honestly report and interpret its findings. And that sums it all up, basically. But the point is, science should be about discovering the truth about a matter, and then what you do with that truth is up to us. So, for instance, to use that same example of studying the IQ, if when you find the IQ results tell you that there is a below average IQ, you then say, right, well, that means we're going to mock these people and we're going to see ourselves as being superior to them and we're going to make them into second-class citizens. Well, obviously that would be wrong. But if you were to look at that and then you were to say, well, this shows that there is a difference here that would show itself likely in the sort of jobs that this particular people group is likely to get. And therefore, perhaps we shouldn't encourage them to think that they are going to be able to do high-powered jobs like become directors or astronauts or brain surgeons and things like that. And perhaps this research should be looked at when people are claiming, for instance, that this group is being discriminated against and that's why they don't have all these top jobs. It all depends on how you look at the research and how you look at the findings. Science should try to find out everything that we can by measuring whatever we can, because that's what science is about, really. It's about measuring things and getting an accurate measurement. And what nature is saying is, well, if that accurate measurement could be misused, then we shouldn't be measuring it at all. Well, no, we should be measuring it, but we should be preventing the misuse of it. And science is being misused. It's being ignored. It's being completely ignored. And when we find differences between groups, instead of saying, well, what is the cause of this difference? Could there be a biological cause to this? Instead of that, we just tend to say, well, it must be because white people have oppressed this group, or it must be because white males have oppressed females, or straight people have oppressed homosexuals, and that's the reason for the difference. When the science actually tells us that there are innate differences between people groups. So it's quite scandalous, really, that these guidelines have come out, and they're essentially saying that things such as IQ studies, or perhaps looking at the incident of sexually transmitted diseases amongst homosexuals, anything that actually shows a difference between people groups should not be researched, because it goes against human rights, because the effects on that actual group of people, it might hurt their feelings, I guess, to learn some of these facts. Shocking. It really is shocking that that's actually being carried out by nature. I suspect that Professor Dutton will have a lot more to say about it, but I just wanted to draw attention to it, and I thought his response to it was very succinct. I will repeat it. Science must have no interest in such philosophical issues. Science must honestly report and interpret its findings. Well, one of the findings of the science is that, you don't even need to be doing the science to be doing this. All you need to do is look at multicultural cities and look at the crime rate that occurs in multicultural cities to know that multiculturalism is not conducive to having a peaceful community of people. Because, of course, what you've got there is you've got multiple communities of people, and the criminals in one community are always going to find it easier to find victims from other communities than their own. So multiculturalism is possibly the most negative thing you could ever have for community cohesion within a city, say, for instance. Plus, you also have the cultural differences that there are. And we have quite big cultural differences between the way that Christians do things and the way that Muslims do things. And when you do get large numbers of Muslims within a city, they obviously wish to continue their culture. And that can lead to problems. And we had a problem in Brussels over the weekend. A large number of police officers were called in to deal with a mass brawl between Syrian nationals in the Brussels district of Molenbeek on Friday, that is said to have involved 50 to 100 participants. Now, of course, people will say, ah, yes, but you also get brawls that involve that number of people, and they're white people. Take, for instance, football hooliganism. Football hooligans might have a brawl, and the majority of people in that brawl would be white. But the fact is, if there hadn't been this large number of Syrian nationals in Molenbeek, this brawl would not have taken place. Yes, there would still be brawls taking place between white football hooligans, but there wouldn't be brawls with white football hooligans and brawls between Syrian nationals. And as we'll see later on, we have another incident like this, which took place in Britain. Getting back to this one that took place in Molenbeek, the mass brawl took place in Albert Park on Friday evening at the crossroads of Joseph Beek Avenue and Edmund Mactens Boulevard, and saw the mob fight among themselves and continue to fight in a house of the Rue d'Ostend. So this wasn't football hooliganism. This was something probably unique to this community, as we will find out. Police were present at both mass brawls in large numbers, and reinforcements had to be called in from other areas due to the scale of the conflict. And that is a large conflict, 50 to 100 participants all fighting in a street and all fighting in a house. These police interventions have given rise to 4 judicial arrests. The suspects were interviewed before being released, and the investigation is ongoing, the spokesman of the Brussels Prosecutor Office, Martin Francois, said. According to Sudinfo, the brawl likely stemmed from a dispute between 2 Syrian families regarding marriage issues, and comes just months after another Syrian was stabbed in the Brussels district of Schickbeek in June over another marriage-related conflict. So here is where we have the cultural differences. How often do you hear of there being a brawl between 100 white people regarding a marriage issue? You just don't hear of that at all. And yet here, within the space of 2 months, we have 2 massive brawls that have taken place due to marriage-related interests. And if these Syrians had not actually been in Brussels, then these brawls would not have taken place. And the likelihood of brawls taking place over marriage-related issues in any country that has Syrians in is quite high. And it's quite high with Muslims in general, to be honest. They do tend to have early marriage in some parts of the world, Pakistan, Afghanistan. They still have arranged marriage. Girls can get married at the age of 9 because that's what Muhammad did, and he's seen as the perfect man, and I don't think we can really place a value judgment on that. That is their tradition. But it's not our traditions over here in Europe, and yet these traditions are brought over here with them. And they're encouraged to keep their culture. They're encouraged to try and assimilate and become liberal, but they're also encouraged to keep their culture, and they should be encouraged to keep their culture. I mean, that is what is best for them. But the problem is, it's not the same culture that we have. And the great shame about this is that white people are not encouraged to keep their culture. We're being told that we don't actually have a culture that's any different to anybody else. Our culture is just a mix of everything else and nothing unique, which couldn't be further from the truth. But if you're going to have a culture that has arranged marriage and a culture that doesn't, and a culture that allows multiple wives, and a culture that doesn't, and a culture that allows marriage at age 9, and a culture that doesn't, and quite clearly, that's going to be a recipe for friction, isn't it? And the culture that comes from elsewhere is going to feel that like it's being persecuted, isn't it? Because the new country that they've moved to doesn't allow them to do what they want to do. And there's also a higher crime rate, higher violence rate in a lot of Islamic countries. And it's not that there are probably more fights over there or anything like that. It's just that they tend to be a lot more violent. They tend to use weapons. I mean, like it says here, this Syrian was stabbed over a marriage-related conflict. And then we also have the honor killings. We have Islamic women, Islamic daughters that become westernized. They get all this liberal progressive propaganda in the European schools. They start behaving like a European. They start dating. And the father is absolutely exasperated by this. And he sees that it is a dishonor on the family that the daughter is behaving like a European instead of behaving like a Muslim, and they can end up murdering their own daughters, or they can end up taking them to Pakistan and forcing them to marry someone. And it's just such a shame that happens, because if that individual Muslim had remained in his Muslim country, then the daughter would probably not have taken on these Western values, because everyone around her would have had Islamic values. and she would have married a Muslim man rather than dating Europeans, and she would still be alive. And this is the tragedy of multiculturalism. It is not just bad for white people. It creates all sorts of issues for the ethnic minorities that are coming to Europe. The location of the mass brawl, Molenbeek, has become well known internationally for its links to radical Islamic extremism, with the 2015 Paris Bataclan attacker Salah Abdeslam hiding in the district for months before he was finally arrested by police. And this is another issue that multiculturalism brings. Obviously, if you're from an ethnic minority community, your loyalties are going to be to your ethnic kinsmen. And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, that's quite correct, especially if you've got a small community, say you've got a small community of, I don't know, Senegalese that have moved into Britain, and there aren't that many of them, there aren't that many people that speak Senegalese, then if one of that, a member of that community gets into trouble, the rest of the community are going to be looking out for them, and they're not going to want to report them to the police. If they do report them to the police, they could end up being ostracized, because clearly their loyalty is going to be to their extended family of Senegalese people. And you have the same thing that happened here. This Muslim, this jihadi extremist Muslim who carried out a horrific terrorist attack, was able to run to this majority Muslim area, and he knew that he was then safe. He knew that the Muslims there were not going to report him to the police. If they did that, then that they would be bad Muslims. They would be going against the Quran. They'd be going against the Islamic teaching. So this is the other issue that we face. There will always be these loyalties there to the community, a greater loyalty to the community than a loyalty to the country in which they reside. And this is a problem that's gradually been growing since immigration increased throughout Europe. And now we have these terrorist attacks, and we have the Muslims that carry out the terrorist attacks that are protected by other Muslims within their community. So as happened here, it was months before this guy was actually arrested, and he was just walking around in the district quite safe. I mean, this Molenbeek district, it has a bad reputation for all sorts of problems, similar to Malmö in Sweden, which also has no-go areas, terrorist attacks, police get attacked, and not even ambulances and the fire engines can actually go into some parts of Malmö. And it's a similar problem that they have in Molenbeek. This is what multiculturalism brings. Earlier this year, the imam of the Al-Khalil Grand Mosque in Molenbeek, Mohamed Toujani, was stripped of his residency permit by the Belgian government, who deemed him to be a serious threat to the country's security. Think about that. That is the imam of the Grand Mosque, the biggest mosque in Molenbeek, and the head of that mosque is a serious threat to the country's security. I wonder how many other mosques there are in Europe with imams in them that are a serious threat to their country's security, and the state is too frightened to do anything about it because they know that they will just get accused of Islamophobia if they do. In the past, we have given radical preachers too much leeway. This man was probably the most influential preacher in Belgium. With this decision, we are making a difference and giving a clear signal. We will not tolerate those who divide and threaten our national security, the Belgian Secretary of State for Asylum and Migration, Madi, said. So he wasn't just an influential preacher in Molenbeek. The most influential preacher in the whole country of Belgium was encouraging terrorism. What does that say about the influential preachers in other parts of Europe? Where does the money come from to build these mosques? Well, it comes from Saudi Arabia. And what is the sort of Islam that they have in Saudi Arabia? Well, it is a strict literary interpretation of Islam that includes stoning for adulterers, death penalty for homosexuals. I think if a woman is raped, then I think she's punished for that as well. It's not the rapist's fault. They allow marriage with young children. I think they allow slavery as well. In some instances, you can see that Saudi Arabians purchase slaves. They're not very well known for their human rights, and yet they fund all these mosques that we have in Europe, and they provide the preachers in the mosques. They provide the imams. And yet, who is it that we're told is the terrorist threat, the Islamic terrorist threat? Well, we're told that that's Iran. Iran doesn't fund any of the mosques in Europe. As far as I'm aware, it's all Saudi Arabia that does. And their form of Islam is not the liberal Islam that is promoted in Britain. I guess it's also promoted around Europe. It's this strict literary interpretation of it, with completely adhering to Sharia law, which is a different law system to the one that we have in Europe. And we have these Sharia law courts that have been set up within our countries. Theresa May called for an investigation into these Sharia law courts, and I think they had a Muslim investigating. Who better than a Muslim to investigate Muslims? And I think he came back and said, oh yes, they're just dealing with marriage issues, and it saves the British courts from having to deal with it. And Britain just said, oh well, that's okay then, just carry on there. And it may be that that's all they are dealing with is marriage issues, but that is the start of a parallel legal system within our country. And in these areas that are exclusively Muslim, that's the court that they will be going to. And that is the law that they will be living by. That's the law that they want to be living by. So in effect, you have a parallel system growing within the country. These are all the problems that multiculturalism and immigration brings. It just weakens the cohesion of the original nation that occupied and built that country. Well, moving from Brussels over to Britain, and again talking about the breakdown of society that multiculturalism brings. In appalling scenes shared on social media, a gang of youths were witnessed ransacking a McDonald's in Nottingham, jumping over the counter and stealing food and drinks. And of course it says here a gang of youths, but when you look at the video, they are predominantly youths of colour. And this follows on from a phenomenon that we've seen in America over the last 10 years. I've reported on it more about 5 or 6 years back than recently. But you get these flash mobs that just turn up at a petrol station, and they'll just steal everything. And just simply because of the numbers that they have, nobody can do anything about this. Nobody knows who arranges it. And I guess people are just walking by outside, see what's going on, and they run in and take part in it. I mean, if these were white people and you saw a shop that was being robbed, white people would probably go in there to stop the crime from happening. In fact, that's what we rely on with the police. That's why we're not armed. The police rely upon the public stepping in to help if they are trying to arrest someone. But what we've seen in multicultural areas when the police are trying to arrest someone is that the members of the person the police are trying to arrest, the members of their community, will actually step in to help the criminal rather than stepping in to help the police, because there is this loyalty to your own people group, of course. But what we see here, we just see this flash mob appearing in McDonald's, jumping over the counter, stealing everything they can, and they all look like teenagers, and I don't think I saw anybody that was white amongst them. In the latest youth looting mob action in England, a group of around 50 youths ransacked a McDonald's in the city centre of the central English city of Nottingham on Sunday. In footage posted on social media, the youths have seen jumping over the counter and stealing food and drinks from the fast food restaurant. And I've also seen this happening in South Africa. There's also lots of footage of this sort of thing that happens there. Unfortunately, this is something that we do see with this people group, with the youths of this people group. When there are large numbers of them, crimes seem to happen. And that's not to say that we should be hating them, because they're more likely to have crimes happening, because they're also more likely to be the victims of these crimes. And the reason why these sort of things happen, I believe, is because they have an average lower IQ than white people. Black Africans have an average IQ of about 70. African Americans, an average IQ of about 80. White people have an average IQ of 100. And if you have an average IQ that is 20 or 30 points lower than what Europeans have, the average European has, then there is a likelihood that there's just more likely that there's going to be crime. It's more likely that people are going to misinterpret things that have been said to them, and they might get violent, and it's more likely that they're not going to have the sympathy for the community that you would have as a European. And then on top of that, you add the fact that it's multicultural, you add the fact that what you've got here is people of colour living in a country that was built by white people, so they're not going to have the loyalty to the country that white people have. They're not going to have the loyalty to the community that white people have. They've been told that they were enslaved by white people, and the reason why Africa doesn't do so well as other countries is because it was looted by white people. So they have a grudge against white people, and when they see a chance to help themselves to something that the white man's built, such as a McDonald's, they're going to do that. And you know, you can't really blame them for doing that after all the propaganda they've been given telling them that white people are the oppressors. Police said that the footage appears to have been filmed by members of the Gang of Youths themselves, perhaps to brag about their exploits. Approximately 20 members of the group remained in the restaurant, threatening and abusing staff members. This is, again, this is another thing that we see that black criminals tend to do. If they are carrying out a crime, they might say, well, I'm already carried out one crime, why not carry out lots more? And there's a very interesting Louis Theroux interview that he did, and I think that was in South Africa, where he was talking to a black criminal, and that's what he was saying. Well, if I'm going to carry out one crime, why not carry out lots more? I've broken the law once, why not break it lots more times? And I think that's probably what was happening here. They had already overstepped the boundaries and started robbing the McDonald's, so they thought, well, let's threaten and abuse the staff members as well, and apparently they stayed there. So far, there have been no arrests made in connection to the incident. Well, it would be very racist of the police to go arresting these black youths for helping themselves to reparations for slavery, wouldn't it? A spokesperson for Nottinghamshire Police said, "We are treating this incident very seriously. This is a commercial burglary, as the group forced their way behind the counter of a business and stole food and soft drinks." And I'm sure the youngsters doing this, I'm sure they thought that, you know, that this was the height of hilarity, just to take all this stuff. I doubt whether they really thought about the what could possibly happen to them, how they could end up being jailed, or not jailed, but end up with a criminal record. But of course, the drive now is to not give black people a criminal record, because it might stigmatize them in the future. So they'll probably all be let off, even if they do find some of them. The police said, "It is completely unacceptable. No arrests have been made yet, but we will be working with the Clumber Street McDonald's and carrying out CCTV inquiries to find those responsible." This incident comes 1 week after another gang of youths looted American candy stores and other shops in a popular shopping area of central London. And again, this was a mainly black group. How often is it that you see 50 to 100 white youths robbing and ransacking a store? You don't see it, but you do see black groups and non-white groups doing this in videos on the internet. Perhaps there are instances of white people doing this, but they just don't video it themselves. They just don't put it up online. But somehow I doubt that. I think this is partly due to the sense of grievance that black and non-white youths have against white people and against society. Footage on social media showed the group storming into shops and stealing candy, as well as jumping on a supercar on Oxford Street. The UK capital is facing a crime wave in general, with lawlessness spreading throughout the city. Last week, London saw a series of violent attacks, including 6 homicides, one of which saw an 87-year-old man stabbed to death on his mobility scooter. An absolutely horrific attack that was. The guy that attacked him, the alleged murderer was black and he has form. He was involved in, I think it was robbery of jewelries some years back. And the fact of the matter is, if we didn't have the immigration policy that we have, he would not have been in this country. And this white, disabled, elderly man would still be alive. He wouldn't have been attacked, because the person that attacked him would not have been in this country. He would have been in his country of origin. Of course, London Mayor Sadiq Khan has commented on this. London Mayor Sadiq Khan, who has faced criticism since the start of his tenure for being soft on crime, has attempted to shift the blame for the crime wave, citing the hot weather and the cost of living crisis as excuses for the deadly scenes witnessed in his city. Yes, that's right. It's because it costs too much money for a pint of beer. This guy just decided he was going to go out and murder a disabled man. And the reason for the other stabbings is because it was just too hot. I mean, those are not reasons for why you have a crime wave. The reason why London has this high crime rate, I believe, is because it is multicultural. There's two parts to that. As I pointed out earlier, you have a criminal element within every community, and that criminal element is always going to find it easier to find victims from other communities. If there was just one ethnic minority community there would be less crime, because if they were to be carrying out a crime and looking for a victim, that victim would be a part of their own community, so they would be less likely to carry out that crime. When you have multiculturalism and you have different communities, the criminal element from one community is going to find it easier to pick victims from the other communities around him. Plus, we also see that there are different degrees of crime and different rates of criminal activity that are associated with these different people groups. And you might have difficulty finding numbers to do with ethnicity over here in Britain, but you can find those numbers in America. For instance, with the black community, they make up 14% of the population, but they carry out 56% of the murders. So you have different people groups living together with different crime rates. And of course, the Chinese have the lowest crime rate. So you have different groups of people living together with different crime rates. Plus, you have this potential for more crime to happen because there's more potential victims there in multiculturalism. So any multicultural city is going to have far more crime than any city that is not multicultural. As proof of this, we can look to a European city that is not multicultural, or at least only a tiny percentage multicultural, and that would be Reykjavik in Iceland. If you look at Reykjavik in Iceland, look at the crime rate there. A couple of years back, they did not even have one murder in the city. And I would say that is because it's ethnically homogenous and European. Again, I doubt very much whether they have murders in Tokyo, which is majority Japanese. Obviously, most capital cities have communities of other ethnicities that are living there because lots of business is done there. But I think Reykjavik is something like 99% white. I mean, the whole country itself, Iceland, is very, very much a majority white, and it has hardly any crime there. People might say, oh yes, well that's because it's cold. If you look at the countryside where there is less multiculturalism, you'll always find that there is less crimes in the countryside as well. Multiculturalism is the reason why London has so much crime, I believe. Former London mayoral candidate Conservative Sean Bailey wrote last week of Mr. Khan, no matter what it is, he will always find someone else to blame. But in the real world, those who observe will find that Sadiq Khan has always been soft on crime. It is his reluctance to support stop and search that has been particularly concerning to me. And of course, stop and search gets accused of being racist because the police go after more black suspects than their percentage of the population. But if the police are going after more black suspects than their percentage of the population, then that has to be because more of them fit a witness description of a suspect. If that part of the population wasn't committing so much crime, the witnesses to the crime would not be reporting them for committing that crime, and the police would not be stopping and searching them. So Sadiq Khan tries to put a stop to this stop and search, and what that results in is people getting away with carrying knives and then carrying out these criminal attacks. all the black mothers of these poor black victims that have been stabbed, they all say, well, I wish you would bring back this stop and search. But the white liberals say, oh, no, it's racist. We can't have that. So that is another point, another reason for this high crime rate that plays into this. Sean Bailey continued, there is a growing sense that Britain's capital has become a Wild West, that people can do whatever they please and that the police will not do anything to stop them. Of course, if you say something that disagrees with public policy on multiculturalism or the homosexual agenda, if you talk about that online, then you might be arrested. If you post a picture of four pride flags, for instance, in the shape of a swastika, then the police are going to come around and arrest you. But it looks like they're not going to stop black gang members that look like they have knives on them, because the police will then be accused of being racist. I mean, the source of all of these problems is multiculturalism, and the solution to these problems is ethnically homogenous communities. Well, thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.